In the next day or so, well, in the next service or so, I hope to have the PowerPoint printouts from this morning. I gotta tell you, with my life as crazy as it is right now, it is hard. I called the library to do a PowerPoint presentation for this morning a few days ago, and they said, yes, we have PowerPoint, because I currently don't have it. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to go over there. And, of course, I looked up on their web hours, and they were closed Friday and Saturday. So I do plan on getting that out to you all, because I want you all to be able to have a copy of it. And I know how it can be a little bit easier to follow along when you have something to write with and look at to take notes with. So I apologize for that, and I'll get that to you. Most of you are probably aware that our Vacation Bible School is coming up in just a few short weeks. And to kind of tie in a lesson with a plug for us to all attend Vacation Bible School, I'd like to base what I want to talk about this morning from the book of Proverbs. And kind of leading up to emphasizing the point that Vacation Bible School isn't just for children. And it's easy to see, I think, why we get that impression, because it's scheduled outside of school hours. It's scheduled in the summer when school isn't in session. And a lot of times, at least when I was growing up, there wasn't anything offered for the adults at the same time. So the mother or father would bring their children in the morning, either drop them off or watch them sing or watch them come together for a period of study with their teachers. And then everybody goes home. I remember I had 1 year I came home with goldfish, and the other night, you know, and another year I would come home with, you know, maybe some building that, you know, that we built in class that illustrated really good principles, and it helped me understand what was being taught from the Bible. But having said that, as we go along, it's easy to sometimes think, well, it's simply for children. And at Providence, that simply isn't the case, because we're going to have a series of lessons based out of the book of Proverbs every night. And what generally happens in Vacation Bible School is everybody will come together, and the children, Mr. Danny or someone like that, will lead them in singing some songs, and that's good for the children, and they learn that. And one of the times that really made it hit home for me that a period of study like this was so much more than just for the children was when I was attending church in Lexington. There was a good friend of mine who was a few years older than me, and we were standing in the back of one of the services of Vacation Bible School, and the children were up front singing the song, "Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. Oh, be careful, little ears, what you hear," and so forth. And the verses go on down to pretty much hit on all of the senses and how we can serve God through those senses and the things to avoid. And he sat back there, and he had his arms crossed, and he had a smile on his face, and he looked at me and he said, this is a very spiritually minded individual, and he said, "Andy, people don't understand, this song isn't for children. This isn't a children's song. This is for adults." And I started thinking about what he meant by that and the applications of, or the implications of the verses in that song, and it really hit home to me about what he was getting at. And that's kind of what I want to talk to you about this morning. Kind of want to take that children's song, "Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see," and then the verses that go on. And we talk about, "Be careful, little ears, what we hear. Be careful, little mouths, what we say. Hands, what we do. And feet, where we go." And I want to base some that text or that song and go back to the text of Proverbs and look at a few of the verses that would emphasize the points of that song to kind of bring it all full circle and to get us ready for Vacation Bible School that would be coming from the book of Proverbs in just a few weeks. The first verse of the song is, "Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see." And if we were talking about not giving sin even an opportunity for a foothold and striving for a higher level of being pure in heart and mind, I think perhaps focusing our eyes on things above and shunning evil things, our eyes are the most important aspect of that. That's the beginning point of doing the right thing or not doing the right thing, walking into sin. So a lot of times our eyes become the window to our heart, and this shows what's going into our heart, and we need to be careful about what we allow our eyes to see. And I know that Proverbs talks about avoiding sin, and that very, very often that begins with our eyes. I mean, we need to guard our eyes from the things we don't need to see, and some examples of that are bad things on the internet or on television. You see that all the time, advertisements and things of the like that a Christian really has no business taking part in or being a part of. It could go as far as, you know, looking inappropriately at another woman or a man or somebody who's not your spouse, and what that what your eyes can lead you to do at that point. Looking with envy or jealousy at somebody who we think might have it so much better than we do in life, or if we could just get our lives like brother so-and-so, then we would be set. And that's really not a good attitude to have either, because if we're looking at other individuals as something, whether it be material possessions that they have, or maybe the family situation that they have, that can really cause some bitterness in our heart. And that all starts with looking at someone else and seeing what they have that maybe we want and don't think that we have. Another thing is focusing too much, looking too much to our past and to our future. A lot of times we beat ourselves up as Christians over the mistakes and the sins we've made in the past. And if we have truly asked for forgiveness of those things, and we've truly turned our back on the ways of the things that we used to do, then we have God's permission, and more than that, His commission to move forward and to go forward with our lives doing the right things. We also don't need to get too caught up on the future as well, because we don't know what tomorrow will bring. Reminded of the Bible verse that says, sufficient is the day for its own troubles. And so we have to focus on the present and not look to the past too much or to the future too much. Yet I think the ultimate, the greatest application of being careful what our eyes see comes from realizing that ultimate understanding comes from the Lord. If you will, turn over to Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 7. I'm going to read a couple of the texts that go along with each of these verses of the song that come from the book of Proverbs as well. In Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 7 it says, be not wise in thine own eyes, fear the Lord, and depart from evil. So be not wise in our own eyes means that we're trusting our own understanding and we're looking to our experiences versus the Lord's all-knowing power. Another verse that says something similar is in chapter 12 and verse 15. That verse says, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise. And that's one of the things that we see, that when we focus on ourselves, when we look inward instead of outward, and when we pay attention to our experiences and put a lot of stock in that versus what God would have us to do, that's a recipe for trouble. And I think that as we look through the book of Proverbs, which if you're not familiar with the book of Proverbs, is a lot of short snippets of sayings that are wise teachings that reveal a lot about the heart of humans, but also about the all-knowing power and the heart of God as well. And so when we look at, we have these constant reminders and verses that say we need to trust God, we need to put our eyes on Him and focus on Him versus our own understanding and our own folly, then that's what we need to do. And sometimes that can be a little bit harder than what we would think a simple verse could boil it down to. But at the same time, that's part of the beauty of it, because if we simply but trust God, then we know that we can be on the right path. And a lot of times, whether it be a good action or a wrong action, the first part of that action starts with your eyes. And that's why we need to keep our eyes pure and do everything that we can to follow God and look to Him for the guidance. The second verse of that song says that, oh, be careful, little ears, what you hear. And this is another concept that can carry both a positive and a negative application. We can do wonderful things by listening and being a friend with our ears, but at the same time, if we give ear to things that we really don't have any business doing, then that can cause trouble as well. For example, there are a lot of things that we need to avoid listening to. We don't need to listen to gossip. I mean, if somebody's spreading rumors about somebody else, and I'm not talking about correcting a brother or sister in sin or pulling somebody aside to give good advice, but rather, hey, did you hear what so-and-so said about, you know, someone else? And that's the type of attitude that we need to really watch out for and not give ear to that, because obviously the saying goes, if they'll gossip to you, they'll gossip about you. And so we need to be careful not to give ear to things like gossip. I think that it's important that we need to filter the words of the television programs and the music that we sometimes listen to. And it's interesting because I grew up, I really liked country music, and I think I still do. I listen to a lot of country music. But at the same time, you would hear a lot of talk several years ago about how rap music was awful and the words are terrible, and that's true. I'm not saying that's not the case. But, you know, as I have children now and I'm trying to raise them up, I just assumed that when I had children, well, if I kept it on the country station, I'd be fine. But there, I mean, I find myself having to turn the station if I'm listening to country music several times because I have 2 7-year-olds in the car, and I don't necessarily think I need to be answering some of the questions that could come up from the type of music I listen to. And again, I'm not saying don't listen to country music. I'm not saying don't watch the television programs you don't want to watch. All I'm saying is I think it would be wise to put our mental filter on some of the things that we listen to and some of the things we allow ourselves to partake in and hear, and just exercise a little bit of caution as we go forward and think, you know, words mean something, whether they're spoken, whether they're sung, or whether they're simply being listened to. They mean something. And when we become desensitized to the things we hear, that again shows another window into our heart and can make doing the right thing just a little bit more tough and a little bit harder. And a couple of verses that talk about listening in the book of Proverbs are chapter 18 and verse 13. And in that verse, this talks about, it kind of combines speaking and listening at the same time. It says, "He that answereth a matter before he heareth it is folly and a shame unto him." So oftentimes we hear the first part of the story and we think to ourselves, that sounds pretty good, that's about right. And then we go on believing that until the second individual comes up to us a week or so later and tells their side of the story. And then we think, well, maybe I should have withheld judgment a little bit, or now I see why that individual did the action he took the action he did. And we sometimes can jump the gun on believing one thing we hear before we hear the whole story. Chapter 12 and verse 15 says that the way of a fool is right in his own eyes. Again, another passage that we've talked about. But he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise. So hearkeneth unto counsel often means that we have to partake in the counsel. We have to be a willing and able listener in order to receive instruction. As I get older, I've looked back on some of the mistakes I've made in life, and sometimes I was hard-headed, or sometimes I wanted to prove someone wrong. And that was really a dangerous spot for me, because if I am in the growing stages of my life and I'm trying to get experience from others who have more than I do, or wisdom from others that have more than I do, I need to be able to sit down and humble myself and being able to listen to that teaching and apply it to my life. And as I get a little bit older, I hope I get a little bit better than that. But again, if I'm fortunate enough to be 50 or 60, I want to be able to sit down and humble myself enough to listen to somebody who may be 70 or 80 who's been through some life experiences that even I haven't. And so we need to be able to listen to that type of counsel. And ultimately, the wisest counsel we could ever have is from the Lord. And a couple verses that point that out are in chapter 1, verse 5, the very beginning of the book of Proverbs. It states, "A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels." You know, in a lot of instances, that's probably how wise men became wise, is that when they were younger, they listened to people who had come before them and the experiences that they've had, and were able to gain knowledge from that and either learn from the mistakes that they had made or see the mistakes that others have made and find a way to avoid those same mistakes. And then in chapter 19 and verse 20 of the book of Proverbs, "Hear counsel and receive instruction, that thou mayest be wise in the latter end." I mean, that kind of sums up the point that we're trying to make here about listening and being careful what we hear with our ears. So a lot of these concepts go both ways. There's positive applications. We need to seek out those things that are pure. And there's also those negative connotations that we need to stay away from some of the things that we are commanded to. The third verse of that song, and again, these verses may be out of order a little bit, but they are still a part of the song, is, "Oh, be careful, little mouth, what you say." And I don't care, you may be the world's strongest man or woman, but no matter who you are, your tongue will always be the most powerful muscle in your entire body because of the power of words and what words can do to people and to yourself. In Proverbs chapter 18, in verse 21, this is how important, listen to what it says, how important our words can be. "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof." And I don't think it's a stretch to think that if we don't, or how we control our tongue, not only represents death and life in this world, it can actually represent death and life in the future world, where we can influence somebody and with our words harden their hearts, or with young Christians say something that's a discouragement to them that can really have a profound effect on their desire and their ability at that age to follow God as best they can. And I think that's something that we need to be careful of and be mindful of. Another text from the book of Proverbs is chapter 10 and verse 19. In verse 19 of chapter 10, this is one I think my wife would probably say I could work on. In the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. Now, I'm not saying that just because I tend to like to talk a lot that means that you're going to necessarily sin. But have you ever noticed when you watch some of the shows on television, whether it's like 48 Hours Mystery or something like that, they always have the little camera in the corner of the room and the guy's being interrogated. And you can almost just tell from watching whether this person's guilty or not, because the people who are innocent are usually just beside themselves, can't hardly speak, are sobbing uncontrollably. But you know the people who are guilty? They sit there and talk. And a lot of time the investigator just has to sit there and just let the person pretty much give himself up. And I've seen that over and over again on the cop television shows and things like that. And it really is a true principle. You can't help but get yourself into trouble if you're constantly talking about things with maybe individuals you shouldn't, or you're constantly jabbering on and on about things, because that goes back to, you know, gossip's not far behind, or saying something that's hurtful about another person won't be far behind. And I think that's something that we can all kind of take and learn from, and maybe some more than others. I mean, I'm sure there's many individuals in here who are men and women of few words, and it's not a bad thing that I want to be more like that at certain times in my life. And so I think that that's something that at least I can work on as well. One other verse that talks about being careful with what we say is chapter 2 and verse 6. In verse 6 of chapter 2, "For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of His mouth cometh knowledge and understanding." Again, going back to the ultimate wisdom, the ultimate instruction comes from the mouth of God. And we have that here. We have the Scriptures. This is the ultimate understanding and the most perfect, the only perfect book that's ever been written. And why is that? It's because we have the mind of God here and what He would have us to know about Him. There's certainly, we can't understand everything, or we don't have the level to understand everything about the power and the awesomeness and the might of God, and why God chooses to allow certain things to occur, or why certain things happen. We don't have that knowledge, but we do have His instruction book for how to live with Him in eternity. And when we listen to and when we fear Him and listen to His voice, then we'll gain understanding that we cannot get from any other person. And we need to remember that also, that if the input of our eyes and our ears are a window to our heart, then our output, our words and our actions, are a reflection of our heart. And that's what's coming out of our heart. And that leads me to the next verse, which is, "Oh, be careful, little hands, what you do." You know, words may cut like nothing else and can be harmful, but we are truly, I think, truly judged on what we do. What we do, our actions. And we need to be constantly active as a diligent and positive force for ourselves and for our families and for the lost and for the Lord. And being diligent means, you know, do not take part in the opposite. We cannot be lazy for the Lord. We cannot be lazy for ourselves, and we can't be lazy for our families as well. Proverbs talks a lot about this subject, more than you might even think. And in chapter 10 and verse 4, the proverb states that he becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. And then in chapter 12 and verse 11, if you can turn over just a couple pages, and I'll give you a second to turn over there. The writer states in verse 11, "He that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread, but he that followeth vain persons is void of understanding." And then finally in verse 24 of the same chapter, chapter 12, the hand of the diligent shall bear rule, but the slothful shall be under tribute. So what we do is very, very important. lot of times when parents are raising their children, they may say, I know you said you're sorry. Or I know, or even a coworker, it doesn't have to be your children, your coworker comes up to you, or a family friend comes up to you and says, you know, I really wronged you, I'm sorry. Well, children are learning and they make some of the same mistakes over and over again. But if you had an individual who was an acquaintance of yours, and they said, you know, I'm really sorry I did that to you, or I really wronged you, and they go out and do the same thing over again, and then they come back to you and say, I'm really sorry, I wronged you. Well, the Bible tells us that that's not really for us to judge their intentions, that we are to forgive others, 70 times 7, meaning that we are to always forgive others. But at the same time, you might wise up a little bit to the situation if somebody's taking advantage of you and adjust accordingly. It's the same principle. You know, if an individual robs my house and he tells me he's sorry, and I say, okay, I appreciate that, and then a month later, I have other things stolen from my garage because the same individual came by and took something from it. He may say he's sorry, and I may say, okay, I appreciate that. But do you know who's going to be the last person I give keys to for my house when I go on vacation to watch over it? It's going to be that person. And that's just an application, and that just goes, that's a principle of the matter. And when we are judged by what we do, we can talk, and say the things, and can stand before groups of people and go on and on about certain things. But if we don't do the things that we say, we're in trouble. I was reading a book by Dave Ramsey. Some of you all may know Dave Ramsey. He's kind of a financial advisor, and he's a moral person. And, you know, it was funny because he said that for years and years, he was listening to his broke financial professors tell him how to handle money, and they didn't build up any wealth themselves. And not that that's the most important thing or even close to the most important thing. But he said he wanted to find out from somebody who was doing things and was successful at it and then follow what they were doing and emulate them. So it all goes back to actions. Anybody can talk a really good game, but unless we apply the tried and true principles to our lives, then we really won't get the benefit from it. And money's fleeting. That's not even the point. But the words of the Lord are forever. And that's something that we need to do what it would have us to do. And then we'll benefit way more than on this life. We'll benefit for forever when getting to live with God. And so, you know, those are one of the things that we need to do in order to do the right thing. And then finally, the last point I want to talk about this morning is the verse that states that, oh, be careful, little feet, where you go. You know, where you find yourself physically a lot of times actually says a lot about you. If you walk into, at the end of our street, they build a Tractor Supply. If you walk into the Tractor Supply store, more than likely you're going to run into some farmers there because they're selling things that farmers need to buy. If you find yourself constantly becoming a patient in the emergency room every other week, you're probably a little clumsy. It's not a bad thing. Not a good thing. It's just where we are a lot of times in life is a reflection of kind of who we are. It's been said, and some of you may have heard it been said, that you're the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. And if I go down that list and I write the people, or I write the five names of the individuals that I spend the most time with, that's actually probably a decent average of who I am as a person as well. And that means that we have to understand that where we go with these individuals, the things that we do with these individuals, and the things that we take part in with them can rub off on us as well as us being able to influence them. If you turn over to Proverbs chapter 22, verses 24 through 25, and then I'll read one other passage that emphasizes this as well. Verses 24 through 25. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go. Going back to be careful little feet where we go. Lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul. And then again, if you would turn over to chapter 4. This will be the last text we read this morning. Chapter 4 and verse 26 and 27. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand, nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil. It was interesting. Several years ago, there was a study on people who had built a significant amount of wealth. They were self-made people who were hard workers, and they were able to save up for retirement really well and get a certain amount of financial wealth. And there was a study done that wanted to get inside the heads of these individuals and figure out why they were able to do this. What steps were taken in order for them to build a certain amount of wealth that others didn't take? And the thought process of a lot of individuals was, well, wealthy people act this way because they're wealthy. Wealthy people have integrity because they can afford to. Wealthy people are generous and give because they can afford to. That was the assumption, that that's why they were acting that way, is because they were wealthy. When in reality, what the study concluded was, they were blessed because they had always acted that way before they had the money. They said the number one thing to being successful in life was integrity. And there may be exceptions to that. That's not to say that there can't be certain individuals who cheat their way to the top, or what they think is the top. But really, the tried and true principles of the majority of people who do well in life, and again, put money aside, it's not about that, who have a fulfilling life, have a contented life, are those who have simply found the right thing to do, and it may sound boring, but they did it over and over and over and over again throughout their lives, whether that comes to making the small decisions or the large decisions. And I've made enough mistakes in my life to know that there's been a lot of times I've had to press the reset button, and I've had to go back, make it right, and take two steps backwards after I've taken three steps forward. But the key that I think is, when we focus on this verse 27, I'll read 26 again, "Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil." You know, if we have that path that goes straight up towards a home in heaven, we may curve around it a little bit, but we need to be on the right track. What we're not going to do is turn to the right and walk that way, or turn to the left and walk that way. We're not going to be perfect. We're going to make mistakes. But as long as we are heading in that direction, and we are doing it with an honest heart and with an honest mind, and we just want to read what God would have us to do and do it, that's the kind of follower He's looking for. Because if my job is to be perfect in and of myself, I'm going to fall short every day, every single day. But it's going to be Christ that perfects me. And it's His sacrifice on the cross that allows me to be perfect. There was a talk one time in a Bible class that I was in where the question was posed, if I want to get this right, the question I think was posed, to enter into heaven, do we have to be perfect? And the first thing that came to mind was, no, you can't. Nobody can. But there are scripture that says that we do, but we need to understand that that has nothing to do with us. It has everything to do with Christ. Because when we take on the blood of Christ through baptism, what we're doing is we are putting on that sacrifice that He made for us. He is the only perfect one. He is the only perfect individual that's ever walked this earth. But He also is the one that shields us from the wrath of God. And when we join the Lord's team, that's the team that's perfect. It won't be anything we do. I'm going to fall short. I'm going to fall short today. I'm going to fall short tomorrow. I'm going to fall short a week from today. But I don't want to make the same mistakes over and again. I want to do the things that I can to make my life right with God. And I know that we want to do that too. I think that we all want to do that. And that's kind of what I want to talk about finally, is that, you know, sometimes we are compelled by positive causes to use our feet. Oh, be careful, little feet, where you go. Sometimes that can be a positive as well. We sometimes sing a song entitled, "Only a Step," you know, only a step to take in order to become a Christian. You have to take that first step. And, you know, the interesting thing about taking that first step is that the second one becomes just a little bit easier. Not a lot easier, but just a little bit easier. And the third one, a bit easier than that. But the result is so much sweeter. I mean, if you are taking those steps to become a Christian, and I can promise, you know, I can promise that much is true. But better yet, don't take my word for it. God promises that the result is so incredibly worth it. And it is hard to imagine how great living with Him in eternity would be. But that second step has to be preceded by a first one. That final step has to be begun with a first one. And that's really the invitation to you this morning. If you haven't taken that first step to become a Christian, that first step's hard. Now, there's no getting around it. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do. But when we continue to take those steps, and we have a group of Christians around who want nothing but the best for every individual here, and will do whatever it takes to help any individual along that path, That second step becomes just a little bit easier. That third step, just a little bit easier. And the fourth step might be a little bit harder. But going on that path, once you set that precedent and you do those simple, you submit your will to the Lord and you do those simple steps and you repeat them day after day after day, your life here will be blessed and certainly your eternal soul will be blessed. And we want that for you this morning. If you are not a Christian and if you have not named Christ as your Savior, please come forward this morning while we stand and while we sing.